Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, the Manus, Administrators of the Universe, text number 8. We'll just read the translation in a little small purport. Osaina Bharata, after Swayambhuva Manu had thus entered the forest with his wife, he stood on one leg on the bank of the river Sunanda. And this way, with only one leg touching the earth, he performed great austerities for 100 years. While performing these austerities, he spoke as follows. Purport. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura comments that the word anvaha means that he chanted or murmured to himself, not that he lectured to anyone. Sri Manor Uvacha. Yena Chetayate Vishvam. Vishvam Chetayate Nayam. Yo Jagarti Shayane Smin. Nayam Tam Veda Veda Saha. Shimanu Uvacha. Swayambhuva Manu chanted. Yena. By whom? The personality of Godhead. Chaitayate. Is brought into animation. Vishvam. The whole universe. Vishvam, the whole universe, the material world, Chaityate, animates, not, yam, he whom, yaha, he who, jagarti, is always awake, watching all activities. Shayane, while sleeping, asmin, in this body, not, I am, the living entity, tam, him, veda, knows, veda, knows, saha, he. Translation of Prabhupada by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Lord Manu said, the Supreme Living Being has created this material world of animation. It is not that He was created by this material world. When everything is silent, the Supreme Being stays awake as a witness. The living entity does not know Him, but He knows everything. Purport. Here is a distinction between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the living entities. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam. According to the Vedic version, the Lord is the Supreme Eternal, the Supreme Living Being. The difference between the Supreme Being and the ordinary living being is that when the material world is annihilated, all the living entities remain silent in oblivion, in a dreaming or unconscious condition, whereas the Supreme Being stays awake as the witness of everything. This material world is created, stays for some time, and is then annihilated. Throughout these changes, however, the Supreme Being remains awake. In the material condition of all living entities, there are three stages of dreaming. When the material world is awake and put in working order, this is a kind of dream, a waking dream. When the living entity goes to sleep, they dream again. And when unconscious at the time of annihilation, when this material world is unmanifested, they enter another stage of dreaming. At any stage in the material world, therefore, they are all dreaming. In the spiritual world, however, everything is awake. Translation again. Lord Manu said, the Supreme Being, Living Being, has created this material world of animation. It is not that he was created by this material world. When everything is silent, the Supreme Being stays awake as a witness. Living Being does not know him, but he knows everything. Again, at the end of the second chapter, Krishna says, Yanisha Sarabhutanam Tasyam Jagrati Samyami Yasya Jagrati Bhutani Sanisha Pashutomune Yanisha Sarabhutanam. What is night for all sentient beings is a time of awakening for the self-control. And the night for all, and the night for the self-control is a time of awakening for all living beings. Is that how it says in Bhagavad Gita? What is night for all beings is the time of awakening for the self-control. That's right. And the time of awakening for all beings is the night for the introspective sage. At night we dream and we wake up and we think, I've dreamt something. But actually, as we learn from this verse, even when we wake up, we're still dreaming. We have our night dream and we have our daydream. So right now we're in our daydream. Although this, because this dream lasts longer, therefore we actually believe it's real. We think at night we're dreaming, that's unreal, and we wake up to this dream, this is real. But actually this dream is just as unreal as the night dream. Because we say the night dream is unreal because we forget about it, it disappears. But actually this body is always disappearing. At every moment we're getting a new body, it's always disappearing. We're just thinking it has some substance to it. It exists, but only temporarily, and doesn't exist exactly as we think it is. So, what's the problem? Let's see, what was the verse before? So that 69, and then we have 70, so 68, Krishna said, Nashti Buddhya Yuktasyaha Natcha Yuktasya Bhavanaha. Well, first of all, Krishna goes, Dhyayate Vishyam Pumsam Sangaste Shupajayate Sangas Sanjayate Kama Kama Krodo Bujayate. Because we don't know who we are, therefore we generally we think ourselves to be something we're not. There's a point in our existence where we have a choice. And what choice we make will depend upon our knowledge. If we have no knowledge, then the choice is already pretty sure what we're going to do. And knowledge doesn't mean technological knowledge. It means to understand that we're not this body. That we're a conscious spiritual being. And our real existence is in consciousness, not in illusory matter. So that's our free will. That's the junction of our free will. Or as Prabhupada writes in the second canto of the Bhagavatam, our free will consists in either orientating ourselves towards the ignorant misconception of identifying ourselves with these gross and subtle bodies, orientating ourselves to identifying ourselves as servants of Krishna. Now, if we orientate ourselves towards identifying ourselves with the gross and subtle bodies, then we look around, we try to figure out what will actually satisfy my gross and subtle body. And of course, in modern society, there are so many opportunities. If you get bored, you just go on the internet, you look around, see if there's something that can excite your mind and senses. Or maybe some devotees have a Facebook account, they can look at all the different faces on the Facebook, all the pictures, make friends with people that you don't know, couldn't care less about you, but you're friends. Yes, we're friends forever. Next life will be Facebook friends again. In any species of life, I'll give you a like. Thumbs up. claws up to. So at that time when we think ourselves to be Krishna's servant, then at once we're in a different world entirely. We're in a spiritual state of consciousness. Otherwise, from contemplating the objects, then lust develops. Lust is an energy which impels us to act in a certain way to gratify our desires. And our desires depend upon what we're hearing about. In other words, if all we're hearing about is the bodily concept of life, like nowadays, most people are going to die and come back as a germ, because that's all they're hearing about. What the germ did today, how the germ has offspring, what his family's like, who he's associating with, the newest news about the germ, or they say virus, whatever you want to call it. So we'll die thinking about the virus. And we'll come back as a germ or a virus. And that's what human civilization is glorifying. So everyone's working, either you're staying home, underneath your pillow, hoping the virus can't find you there, because it's lurking everywhere, just lurking, looking for some innocent, especially devotee, to attack. Ah, I found the devotee. Get him. All right. Or we're out there in the world working so somehow or another we can get protection from the virus, pay the virus off if it knocks on our door. Here's your donation. Go away. So whatever we hear about, that's what our mind becomes filled up with. And whatever our mind becomes filled up with, we become inspired to do. And usually our mind is always filled up with desires about the senses. What will this taste like? What will that feel like? How does that smell? What does that sound like? Our mind is filled with ideas about how to satisfy the senses. And as soon as the mind becomes filled up with these ideas, then we want to satisfy them. We want experience. Everyone wants experience. No one's just hanging around. Well, most people aren't just staying around just to understand things. Most people just want to experience things. And lust tells you, inspires us to experience material objects. And when we do, when these lust is satisfied, then we become greedy for more. Lust doesn't say, all right, we're satisfied. Just like in America, they had this potato chip company, and its motto was, I bet you can't eat but one. Did they have those potato chips here too? No. Well, the idea is they probably put some chemical on the potato chips, so you take one, you get addicted to it. It's like they have this popcorn in the movie theaters, which has zero calories. Which means, because you're hungry, you eat popcorn, but when you eat it, you get hungrier. So you go into the movie theater, and of course it's full of salt, so you get even more hungry. So you go to a movie theater, you pay 10 euros to see the movie, you buy some popcorn for 5 euros, and as soon as you buy the popcorn, you get hungrier. So you wind up spending 30 euros on the popcorn, 15 or 20 on the drink, and 10 euros on the movie, which you don't have time to watch because you're too busy standing in line waiting for your popcorn. So that's called greed. The whole idea is to make people lusty in one way or another, and then greedy. So they become debt slaves. They owe more than they're worth. Of when they leave their body, the tax collector is going to come and even collect their dog. Maybe he's worth something. Because of greed, people just spend much more than they can actually afford. They always want to get a bigger house, bigger car, bigger family, bigger dog, more toys for their children. They need one whole room. Sometimes I go to visit devotees' houses, and even the devotees, they need one room, usually as big as the living room, just to hold the toys of their children. The child is sleeping in a little tiny corner in a room, and the toys are taking up a whole living room. He plays with one toy for 5-10 minutes, gets bored, and they need a new toy. Maybe they need a new house to fit all the toys in. And then anger, because it doesn't satisfy one. One becomes frustrated. What's wrong? Why isn't people listening to me? Why aren't I becoming the hero? I have more toys than anyone on the block. Why don't people respect me for the toys I have? So everyone's imagining themselves to be something that they're not, and they want respect for it. They want to be recognized. And they become angry when people don't recognize them, appreciate it. If you're selling books and someone walks by and says, "Wow, look at those boots," then people immediately become captivated. This person appreciates me, at least my boot. And my boot is not different from me. Everything that I wear is not different from me. It's a reflection of my personality. So everyone wants to be recognized, and when we're not recognized, we become frustrated. I worked so hard to satisfy my lust. I even became greedy. I got more than anyone else of whatever it is, more butterflies in my collection than anyone on the block. And we want to be recognized for it. And when we're not, we become frustrated. All this hard work for nothing. And in that frustration, we fall into illusion. One of the four defects of the conditioned soul are we have imperfect senses. Because our consciousness is just covered over by desire. And we make mistakes. Our first mistake was to come here. And after that, everything else was a mistake. Not come here at the temple, but come to the material world. And then after that, we have a tendency to commit mistakes. We have a tendency to cheat. We have a tendency to have imperfect senses. And then we are an illusion. We have a whole dream we think is going on here. And of course, the hero in the dream is usually not Krishna, it's ourselves. Krishna is just another prop in our dream, in our illusion. Yes, Krishna is there. I have some deity to worship. You know, someone to go and ask for things. The big daddy in the sky. Pray, "Dear Krishna, you know, my toy is not big enough. Can you give me a bigger one?" My birthday's coming up, you know. I already put it in the donation box, you know, my 50 euro cents and a little note of appreciation for all your kindness you're going to bestow upon me. Because I read in the Bhagavatam, if one gives to an ordinary Brahmin, he gets it back in the same amount. But if you give to the Supreme Lord or a purified Brahmin, you get it unlimited. So what's 50 euro cents multiplied unlimitedly? Only Krishna knows how much it's going to be. So an illusion, anything that good happens, we take the credit for, and anything that bad happens, we blame Krishna. He just doesn't listen to me. It's not even Chaturmasya, and he's asleep. What's wrong with the person? And then from that comes forgetfulness. We can't remember anything. Just like when we read the books, we open the book, we try to read something, we close it, we can't even remember what book we just opened. We can't remember, you know, we lost our place. We're trying to figure out, what did I just read? I can't remember. Maybe I could find it somewhere. We got to go through the whole book to find it. And even then we can't remember. So we forget. Why do we forget? Because our knowledge isn't taken away by illusion. And then we lose our intelligence, because intelligence depends upon memory. If we can't see what's going on, then how do we know what to do? If we don't have a vision of reality, then we have no intelligence. We can't remember what reality is, and how will we know what to do? And if we don't know what to do, then we'll do the wrong thing. And we'll get into difficulty. Difficulty doesn't mean we won't get our toys, whatever we're looking for. Difficulty means we'll be more in the bodily concept of life. More and more hankering, more and more lamentation, worse and worse relationships with other living entities, feeling more and more envious and greedy, etc., etc. And due to illusion, thinking we're making progress. We're doing great. More people are envious of me, the more better I must be. So this is all a dream. But we could say it's a nightmare. We're actually living in a nightmare, and we're thinking we're making progress in our nightmare. Therefore, it's recommended to wake up. And the only way of waking up is to hear who we actually are. And not only hear who we actually are, try to work on that basis so we can actually get some, Krishna can reciprocate with us and give us some experience of consciousness, a conscious experience of Him. Because when we have a conscious experience of Him, then the result is, then we have some indication, some scar, that maybe He exists, maybe it's all true, maybe I am eternal. Maybe there's no reason to lament or feel sorry for myself. Oh, my poor self. I'm such a nice person. No one appreciates me. No one loves me. No one gives me what I want. Even Krishna seems to not neglect me. There's no need to hanker or lament, because we're eternal. What could be better than that? Can anyone say what would be better than, I mean, at least as a start, if you got a birthday present, you would open it up and you got a donation and it says, this is from Krishna, for now you can live here for eternally. And most of us would be pretty happy. This is great. I'm eternal now. I'm going to live forever. I have no more problems. Even the virus comes, it can't touch me. Or even if the virus comes, we'll invite him to live with me eternally. No, we're eternal. And then to be eternally in consciousness, to actually be able to understand perfectly everything is that actually is at every moment, and always getting more and more enlightenment, so that everything becomes more and more blissful. In other words, full consciousness means to find out that the source of everything is full of happiness. Not that we become conscious and we become more and more morose. See, God is actually mean and He doesn't like me. Now we'll find out that God loves everyone, including me. And everything is wonderful, actually. The more conscious one becomes, the more one can understand how everything is ultimately wonderful. So reality is what we actually want to enter into. We want to wake up. That's all this Hare Krishna movement is meant for. It's not meant to increase in any way anything except for our consciousness. It's not that the bigger the temple, the better the prasadam, the nicer place to sleep, then we're making advancement. Actually, when we wake up, that's how we can see we're making advancement. And how do we know if we're awake? If we're actually seeing through, at least trying to see through the eyes of the books that we're reading. Not only seeing it, but accepting it and acting according to it. And then experiencing Krishna's reciprocation, so that it becomes realized knowledge, not just a theory. As it says, bhakti parayeshanu vyaktira, anyatra trisha ekakala, prapanamanas yatashnitastus, tushti pushti shudapayanu gasam. Just like when one eats a meal, with every bite of the meal, one feels three things. Alleviation of hunger, growing strength, and energy. I think energy is one of them. Alleviation of hunger, growing strength, and what is it? Satisfaction. So growing satisfaction is well, first of all, there's bhakti parayeshanu vyakti anya trishu eka kala. So that with the advancement of bhakti, we know we're advancing, that we become detached from those things which draw our mind away from Krishna. We no longer identify ourselves with this gross and subtle material bodies, that we understand that we're eternal. Therefore, we're not attracted to the temporary. At the same time, the growing strength means we can see everyone and everything in relationship to Krishna. We become not only convinced, but realize that there's no one or there's nothing which is different from Krishna. And at the same time, one feels satisfaction because one falls in love with Krishna and one falls in love with everyone and everything as they're related to Krishna. So there's nowhere you can turn, see, touch, smell, taste, or anything which won't remind you of Krishna and that you're not in love with. Therefore, there's no one moment I love someone, the next moment I hate them, etc. One moment I'm happy, one moment I'm depressed, one moment I'm enthusiastic, one moment I don't know where I am or where I'm going or what to do. That one is always, everything is perfectly clear, exactly what Krishna wants us to do, how he wants us to do it, and everything we do improves our own consciousness and makes us more and more blissful, and we know perfectly how to help everyone else improve their consciousness and become blissful too. So therefore one has a clear mission in life and knows how to perform it rather than winding around in a circle wondering where we're going, or if we're even getting there. Since we don't know where we're going, we don't know if we're getting to where we're supposed to be getting. So the goal becomes clear, the means of obtaining the goal is clear, and one actually feels oneself going closer and closer to Krishna at every moment, and therefore life becomes joyful. Every moment becomes productive and joyful and more exciting and enthusiastic. And the illusion goes away that I'm this body, everyone else is their body, material nature is supreme, or that there's a void which I have to enter into after I leave this body. Therefore, I have to clutch onto this body as long as possible because it's the only thing I got. It's the most dear and near thing to me. All these illusions go away, and then one is prasannatma, one is joyful and productive and instrumental in actually helping others become productive and happy and joyful too. So I'll stop there. Any questions or comments?
Thank you for the class, Maharaj. So I have a question about the balance between independent thinking and following the authorities. Because we understand that we need to think for ourselves, but also follow the authorities, and how do we find
this? Well, if the authorities ask you to do something, then you have to think about how to do it with care and attention, in devotion. So that's important, not just to do something, but the consciousness in which you do it in. If we do it in the proper consciousness, with the proper understanding, then we'll remember Krishna and we'll be blissful, whatever we're doing. And we think, why is this person the authority? What is he trying to lord it over me? Isn't that why he got in the material world in the first place? Because he's trying to lord it over people? So maybe I should help him. I won't listen to him. Make him a little humble. Do some good for him. No, it's an opportunity. They're actually an authority, giving you something to do in Krishna consciousness, to actually become Krishna conscious. So we should appreciate the fact that they're acting as Krishna's instrument, and we should serve with care and attention those instructions, and then we'll become Krishna conscious. Krishna will reveal himself to us. We'll remember Krishna. Anything else? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Thank you. You mentioned enthusiasm and clarity of vision. And according to the... which will look very similar to conviction. And according to the Bhagavad Gita, in chapter 18, two classes of people are 100% convinced about what they are doing. People in goodness and people in ignorance. Both are very convinced about what they are doing. So, how does one make sure that we do not mistake just stubborn conviction for sattvic conviction?
Which verse are you referring to in the 18th chapter?
This is...
intelligence and the mode of goodness, or...
Yes, goodness and...
Prabhitim cha and Abritim cha.
Adharam, dharam iti ya.
Adharam, that's... Adharman of dharmitiya manitainis habasavritaha sarvatam viparitam chabuddhi saparthatamasi. They think that what's to be done is not to be done. What's not to be done is to be done. Therefore, they're always striving in the wrong direction. Therefore, yakshastra vidim utsrija partite kamakarata sasudim avatnoti nasukam naparam gitim. Those who act whimsically, not following the Shastra, one who gives up the Shastra and acts whimsically, will obtain neither peace nor happiness nor the supreme destination. So, an intelligent person, he knows that by acting properly, then eventually he'll get real happiness. Just as it says, an intelligent person, he can learn by hearing. And a person not so intelligent has to learn by experience. Person has no intelligence, he doesn't learn. So how do we know? Well, if we don't know, then we must be in ignorance. So if we're trying to figure out if I know or not, at least we're inquisitive. So there's some possibility of knowing. Just like you can't ask an animal, just like if you went up to a tiger when he's eating a deer and say, sir, you know, did you ever think of becoming a vegetarian? He won't put any doubts in his mind about his dietary preferences. Because he's an animal. There's no question of thinking like that. But a human being has some opportunity to think. So if we're even asking the question, it means that we have some vision that there are two classes of people or more. And if someone thinks that my way is the highway, I'm the only way, I'm the only one who knows anything, you know, there's only one way of seeing things, then there's not much you can do. Even someone in goodness, they think there's only all the people are all in goodness. Everyone sees the same thing I see. Then he must be in ignorance, because it's not true. But if he understands from Bhagavad Gita that there are varieties of people with varieties of convictions, varieties of knowledge, then when he sees someone in ignorance, he can try to help them. Because after all, our knowledge is scientific. Anyone with any rational brain can see that this body is changing. It's just objectively true. And yet we ourselves within the body are not changing. So anyone who thinks that they're changing along with their body, they're not objectively seeing things properly. Because it's impossible. How can you see yourself changing? Because if you were changing, you wouldn't see yourself anymore. the previous self. So it's just a matter of having at least that much intelligence. And when one doesn't have that much intelligence, then they're just covered by ignorance. Anything else?
Four questions by Avadhuta Roy Prabhu. First, I heard several times devotees saying deep sleep is when the jiva resides in Brahman. Does this refer only to a similarity of experience in Brahman and in deep sleep?
What is it? Supta? Susupti. I don't know exactly Brahman, but it's the absence of material experience. Brahman is not necessarily, it's a different place. But anyhow, susupti means the absence of material experience, which is probably similar to what it's like to be in Brahman. But is the absence of material experience, and therefore it's resting. Material experience means quite a bit of problems. And when you have no material experience, that's when we get some rest. But is it the same? I never heard it was the same as Brahman. Have you heard that, Adi Prushma? Susupti?
In the Vedanta Sutra, there is a comment by Bhagavad Gita that in deep sleep, one enters, the soul enters into the Tama Shakti of Paramatma in the heart.
But is that Brahman?
Not really. I mean, there's also comparison, some comparison.
Some comparison, yeah, because Brahman is permanent. I mean, at least until you fall down from it. There are different varieties of experience. Just like, for instance, when we find out we're not this body, doesn't mean we know who we are. So when we find out we're not this body, we may, for instance, there's a variety. You can merge into that river, the Vaitarani River. You can merge in there, you can merge in Brahman, you can merge in Paramatma. You can enter into a realm where you're not conscious anymore of the material existence, but practically you're not even conscious. So there's a variety of association the soul can have, and there's a variety of experiences that go along with it. Okay.
A second question. Some ISKCON devotees have the philosophy that we are actually in the spiritual world having a bad dream, and that bad dream is what we experience here in this material world. What do you think about this?
Well, we're definitely having a bad dream. And it is definitely we're in the spiritual world, but we're in the prison part of it. You can be in the, we're just like we're in Ljubljana, but we're in the temple part. You could also be in the prison part, still in Ljubljana. But probably we prefer to be here than in the prison. So we're in the spiritual world, we're in the prison part of the spiritual world.
Third question is, Vishwamitra gave two mantras to Lakshman and Ram, the Bala and Atibala, to decrease the need for hunger and sleep, respectively. Is there some other way to decrease these two bodily needs on the level of sadhana?
Yes, take prasadam, devotion. Eat prasadam and relish it, thinking about Krishna. And we become purified, and these things will decrease.
Okay, and the fourth question from yesterday. Example of Vedic democracy would be in Ramayana when Dasharatha presented to people of Ayodhya his desire to make Rama the king, what all people did approve. Other example is that Rama always considered seriously the opinion of his citizens, due to which he discarded even Sita.
Yeah, he considered it, but ultimately he followed Shastra. Kings were in vox populi. They didn't have an election. Dasharatha was, but he had to consider it. Kings were trained up. Consider intelligent people within their kingdom for the most part. But also he had to consider other factors too. Set a good example, therefore he banished Sita. But kings, they weren't just trained up to satisfy the crazy public, whatever whimsical things they had. But they were following Shastra, and part of Shastra, they took in account all other living entities too. When Krishna had the Govardhan Pooj, he didn't say just feed the Brahmins. He fed everyone, including the Chandalas and the dogs and all living entities. So all living entities, were all part of Krishna's eternal expansion, so everything should be considered. But not only just the people, but everything. Scripture should be considered, the wise should be considered, everyone should be considered, so that the best possible activity can go on to help people become Krishna conscious. The aim is to satisfy Krishna. So, to satisfy Krishna, we have to know what, everything, you know, how Krishna sees everything. What would be the most pleasing to Krishna takes into account everything and everyone.
Okay. Radharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.